Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Polacek. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today in our consistently changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addiction, and so much more. As I'm sure many of you expected to hear Alan's voice along with mine this morning, but we're reminded of the reality of what he does when he's not on the air. As a licensed private investigator and crisis interventionist, he gets calls and has to quickly respond, be it locating a runaway teen, escorting a teen to a specialized program, or retrieving an abductive child. I spoke with him last night and learned that he had been asked to locate a runaway girl whose parents believe may be exploited by human trafficking. I got a call about 30 minutes ago from Alan, and I'm happy to say that they had successfully rescued the girl and are currently making arrangements to get her to a program that will help her, unfortunately, with the trauma that she's gone through. As I sit back and think about working with Alan over the years, this is too common. And it really is a reminder of the difficult work that he does. And West Shield really goes out there and aside from going into these human trafficking rings, just general runaway kids and working with a lot of these teens that are really struggling. The big question is after he locates them, where do they go and what's the best treatment? Outpatient individual therapy is very effective for a lot of things, but there are people such as this runaway teen who do have higher needs and need more resources. And I'm happy to bring on our guest today, who I feel is an excellent resource for just that, for working with teenagers who have substance abuse issues, mental health issues, trauma, and other things. So I'd like to welcome Jameson Monroe. Jameson is the founder and CEO of Newport Academy. He's a prominent voice in the field of adolescent mental health treatment, an active participant in the movement to reduce social stigma around psychiatric, mental health, and substance abuse challenges. Jameson's a writer, a spokesperson, a yoga teacher, an advocate of holistic learning, and a compassionate care for struggling teens and their family. He's an accredited expert in the field of teen treatment and rehabilitation and a regular correspondent to CNN, Fox, ABC, and other major networks. He's a featured contributor to the Huffington Post and has lectured at TEDx and the Aspen Ideas Festival, among other conferences. Jameson is currently involved in numerous projects and initiations focused on expanding access to mental health and addiction treatment, including the Inspiration Foundation, the Global Adolescent Project, Drugs Over Dinner. He produced the critically acclaimed documentary film Behind the Orange Crush, which everyone should see, about the prescription drug abuse epidemic in Orange County. Jameson's the recipient of the Freedom Institute 2014 Mona Mansell Award for his impact on the recovery field and community. He's also received the Mental Health Association of Orange County's Community Service Award. Very, very accomplished person. And Newport Academy is really his heart. And it's a series of evidence-based healing centers for adolescents and families struggling with mental health issues, eating disorders, and substance abuse. It offers a family systems approach, providing gender-specific, individualized, and comprehensive holistic programs that encompass clinical therapy, experiential modalities, and academic rigor. Having already been recognized by media outlets such as the Wall Street Journal, Psychology Today, Fox News, and the Today Show, and I believe it's your third appearance on our show, Jameson, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Matt, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be talking to you.
It's quite an introduction, huh?
When is it going to be over?
You've done a few things in this.
My face was getting, I was blushing more and more. I was like, who gave you this bio?
Well, you've really, truly contributed so much to our field. And, as a member of this field, we're very grateful for you, your services, and really just basically bringing treatment to the people.
You know, Matt, it's I hear all those things, and to me, it's just like one foot in front of the other. This, as you know, and the reason why this show exists and why we do what we do is the problem is huge. You know, there's no shortage of pitfalls that teenagers can fall into, and then, you know, we get a domino effect a lot of times too, like the young lady you were talking about. You know, I bet you didn't just one day, you know, wander into the, you know, arms of, you know, someone who's got her now. Thank God we've got her back, but I'm sure there were a lot of steps leading up to that, you know, where she was put in unsafe situations due to many reasons, right? And so, you know, the problem is broad. And so, you know, at Newport and in my personal life, we just try and do as much as we can every day.
Was it hearing stories like this in your community or your personal experience that led to the founding of Newport?
It was primarily my personal experience and also my family's experience. So I'm one of three kids, and my family's first foray into kind of the mental health treatment space was when my sister was 18, I was 9, and my younger brother was 7, and my sister had pretty severe codependency issues, you know, very, very low self-esteem, and her boyfriend and her broke up, and then she attempted suicide by taking a bottle of over-the-counter medication. Mm-hmm. And you know, my brother and I saw her, you know, the ambulance to the hospital, you know, a couple days there, and then I don't remember a whole lot, but I do remember we had to go to like the outpatient facility, and you know, I think she was in there for a little bit, and then she did a lot of outpatient stuff, and this was in Houston, Texas, and I remember going there. I don't remember exactly what was said, things like that, but I remember that was our family's, you know, first venture into the space. And then I followed suit a few years later with my own mental health issues, a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression. You know, I'd say primarily driven by the pressure to perform in today's world as a teenager. This was about 20 years ago. I think it's only gotten worse. We can talk more about that too. I don't know if you agree or not. And then, you know, I started self-medicating. I couldn't, you know, the depression and the anxiety and the stress level was so great that, the first drug I started abusing was Adderall. And that was as a performance enhancement drug before I ever even got a diagnosis for ADD. I just, you know, it's commonly known amongst high schoolers and college kids. 100% of the population knows that, you know, if you want to study longer or harder or be more concentrated, you just take an ADHD medication, right? So I bummed a few from a friend in class, and they worked, and so that was the first drug, I guess you could say, I started abusing, and then I tried alcohol and marijuana shortly thereafter, and that took the edge off, which was nice, because the edge was only amplified with the stimulant drugs. And then that kind of started my, or did, not kind of, it absolutely started my spiral into, you know, developing a substance use disorder. That was in order to self-medicate, you know, my many mental health issues that I had, that because I was a good student and a decent athlete, you know, were never really perceived to be needed to address. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, if things look good on the outside, why ask too many questions?
Right.
Don't rock the boat. And then I landed in treatment as a teenager, a couple different treatment facilities, and then as a young adult. And so back to the inspiration for starting Newport Academy was that, you know, going to, especially a couple of the adolescent programs that I went to, you know, it was really very much a very cookie-cutter model. There was a huge focus on, and I'd say 80% of the focus was on the 12 steps and on the big book. And I'm a huge proponent of 12-step programs. They've helped me tremendously in my personal recovery. But for a teenager, and especially at that stage in my personal life, I needed a lot more. You know, I needed a psychotherapist. Yeah. I needed a trauma expert. I needed a really good family therapist. You know, there's so
more individualized.
Yeah, exactly. Much more individualized and much deeper. You know, I think that 12 steps are great for kind of a plan of action, if you will. But, you know, 12 steps don't give you a trauma therapist.
Right.
You know,
there's more going on.
There's a lot more going on, exactly. And actually, Bill W. wrote in the Big Book, he said, our liquor is but a symptom. We had to get down to the causes and conditions. And so by the time I read that when I was in my early 20s, I was like, that's the answer. That's what, but like, I'd read the book, but that never stuck out. And then I finally read that, and I said, that's what I've been trying to figure out, you know, in my own journey, is that the behaviors are just symptoms. Like what the end result, what we see, what parents see in their kids, whether it's the acting out sexually, whether it's eating disorder or cutting oneself or substance abuse, which is kind of the most obvious, those are the last, kind of the last domino to fall, right? Those are the symptoms. The problem starts much earlier and on the inside, right? Our liquor was but a symptom, our food was but a symptom, our sex was but a symptom, the over or under use of these, and we have to get down to the causes and conditions, right? And I know in my personal story, and then as I started to relate to so many others, is that, you know, I had a very low self-esteem, and that was a result of, you know, some traumatic, you know, childhood upbringing and things like that that were never discussed or talked about. And so it only makes sense that, you know, I needed to fill this void with something. And then that's what I tell parents all the time is that, you know, drugs work, you know, alcohol works, you know, overeating works, sex works. They take us outside of ourselves, away from the problem, and we're able to numb out, or as we call it, kind of self-medicate. So, you know, back to the inspiration, I surveyed the landscape. I'd been in a bunch of programs. My younger brother followed suit right behind me, and kind of realized that there wasn't, you know, from what I could see, there wasn't a truly 100% kind of holistic, you know, viewpoint on this kind of teenage mental health area, and so set out to start Newport Academy, and that was in 2008, you know, was able to recruit a couple awesome doctors, our founding clinical director, Dr. Barbara Nozell, still with us today and very, very active in the programming. And yeah, so that was the inspiration, personal family story, and then kind of seeing what was out there for teenagers and wanting to build something that was comprehensive, holistic, and also fun. You know, and I don't say that lightly, you know, because as a teenager, when you go into treatment, you think your life's over. How are you going to have any fun anymore? How are you going to make friends? How are you going to meet boys, girls, you know? And so you got to introduce a whole new way of life. And so we had to make sure that we did that, too.
And the huge contribution it is to our world. I mean, I feel like, you know, there hasn't been a focus on teenage mental health up until, you know, you kind of got the ball rolling. And one of the components, you know, I think people think of treatment as sending your kid off and, you know, quote, fixing them or curing them and then sending them back. But the family component to me is so critical. And full disclosure, I got the opportunity to sit with Dr. Barbara in one of her family groups at Newport Academy, and I was blown away. I was literally in tears watching really the mastery of her work, and not just her work, but the family program you've developed, where families do come out on weekends, and it's not a send your kid away and get them cured. It's a family issue, a family problem, and the way you integrate family work, I was truly blown away by.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much. And yeah, and that's, you know, a teenager is only a product of their environment, and so the parents need to be part of the solution. And in order to do that, you've got to have a physical presence. You can't do family therapy kind of like, you know, through letters or through a family week per se. You know, like when I was in treatment, my parents came for like family week, which was really like 3 days. It was kind of like, you know, let's throw everything at you. Here you go. And what's the next step kind of thing?
Like a dummy's guide.
Yeah, exactly. But it was more than, it was like that whole, you know, those dummies guys are like 400 pages thick.
A weak
big book. But it was going through that, yeah, in 3 days. And
it might be able to teach you to juggle, but it might not be able to help you with your family relationship.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, because that requires, you know, work and, you know, sessions, real therapy sessions. And so if we're providing real, you know, teenage mental health treatment, we're doing family work too. It's just, it's to us, it's a given. And so that's so awesome that you get to sit with Barbara in one of those sessions. And we've got a whole team of family therapists. I think at last count, we've got like 35 clinicians at Newport Academy, and some of those are, you know, individual therapists, and some of those are family therapists, and six psychiatrists, but on the family therapy component is that, you know, we start very early on, and I think that you've got to involve the parents in the admissions process, you have to involve the parents in the assessment process, because you get, you know, one side of the story from the kid, another side of the story from the previous treating clinicians or consultants or whatnot, and then you got mom's opinion, which is most of the time different than dad's opinion. You know, so you gotta take everything into account when you're devising the plan, and then once you're executing that plan, you gotta involve everybody in the process. And so we do that with weekly family therapy sessions, ideally in person. You know, one of the reasons why we have facilities on both coasts is to make it more accessible for people to come do that family therapy. And then every other weekend, parents are on campus for an all-day Saturday. We do a multifamily process group, we do a parent support group, and we do a lot of psychoeducational stuff, whether that's didactic or outside interactive work. You know, we involve everybody in the process.
And they get a pretty good meal when they're there.
You remember that part.
I remember that part. And I do remember you shaming me about my diet a little bit.
Man, you should come back now. We actually, since then, because that was like 2 or 3 years ago, about a year ago, we even upped the ante and brought on one of my best friends, Jeffrey Zarofsky, who's a restaurateur, and actually built the largest farm in Manhattan at, I think it was at 29th and the East River, at one of his restaurants called River Park. And awesome. Literally had a garden, you know, on the deck and on the roof that supplied a lot of stuff for his restaurant. And he kind of retired from the restaurant business after about a dozen years, and he's been working building our farm to table program. So if you go to any of our campuses, we've got either a greenhouse or a lot of you know, planters where we're growing a lot of our own vegetables, for the most part, some fruits. We got some fruit trees, and we're trying to becoming as farm-to-table, self-sustaining as possible. But diet's such a huge thing, and that's why we do it, is because in today's society, you know, it's all about how fast, you know, can we get some food, and a lot of times a lot of attention isn't focused on how nourishing that may be. For instance, you know, we were just buying some cranberry juice at the grocery store, and you look at one of them has 28 grams of sugar per serving, and the organic kind of local one has 7 grams, you know. And it's like, do you buy the brand name or the off brand? And that makes a big difference. And I think that the first addiction we have as kids, and I was one of these too, is to sugar.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of, you know, pancakes and Lego my ego waffles, you know, and just cereal, the amount of sugar and all these things that we eat that spikes our, you know, the levels, our levels, our sugar levels, glucose levels in our system, and then we crash. And that's what most kids are eating every morning, are, you know, processed sugars and processed carbohydrates. It does not set the body up for an ideal environment. And so what we do is, we serve, you know, no added sugars, you know, very few, you know, no processed carbohydrates. We get the natural carbohydrates, which actually exist in fruits and vegetables and things like that. And it's amazing what happens, actually, when you feed a teenager a very balanced diet that's got the proper amount of nutrition for their, not only their body development, but especially the brain development.
Yeah, I was reading that Sugar Crush book, which is touching on everything, and we had a guest once that spoke about this. And so you actually do notice a difference in the young adults that start, you know, having this diet at Newport?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Matt. Yeah. And you actually see them The first few days of treatment, a lot of them kind of go through withdrawal. I mean, there's no other way to describe it, but they're kind of fiending for something sugar, you know. And it's, you know, they get over it, thankfully, because, you know, they're very resilient. Their bodies as teenagers, and as we know, getting older, our bodies aren't so resilient in many ways. But then once they start eating, you know, a whole food kind of plant-based diet, we do serve meat and fish, things like that too. By the end of treatment, we even have kids, when we're doing their aftercare plan, are telling the parents what foods they need to throw out before they come home.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like no more white bread, you know, get rid of the ice cream in the freezer, like, you know.
And the kids are engaged in it. They're not, you know, adverse to it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not 100% across the board, for right. sure. But they're engaged. We're educating them on what they're eating. They're actively involved in planting and harvesting the produce, the fruits and vegetables. So it's great to see that. I mean, and I've certainly, I mean, I think you were talking about the Sugar Crush book. I mean, it's great, more and more resources that are out there for us as providers and for people in their own homes too.
Changing diets, you know, we're becoming a lot more holistic, and I know that's another big approach that you have, and, you know, integrating mindfulness and your own yoga practice. Was that something that kind of stemmed from your own experiences doing yoga, or where did that come into the picture?
It all started with meditation for me, actually. Kind of the last treatment center I was in when I was 24, I started meditating on a daily basis. And not until I turned around and looked at it about 9 months later did I realize the impact that it was making. Because with things like yoga and meditation, it's not a quick fix like an antidepressant is. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a daily practice, and, you know, it's a bad word these days. It's work.
Right.
You know, it's work. And so not until I looked back probably almost a year later did I realize the real impact that it had in my life. And then, I mean, the research on meditation, as I'm sure you know, is
fascinating.
Is so deep and so effective. You know, everyone, even Harvard University, you know, has published studies on the effects of meditation on depression, on anxiety. You know, even yoga for trauma, yoga for PTSD. You know, Bessel van der Kolk and his research, also out of Boston. The research is there, and the facts point to the fact that it is just as, and a lot of times even more effective than medication. So we've got this free tool, scientifically, clinically proven to be just as, if not, and in my personal opinion, it is more effective than the medication. And it's just a free tool. And so we teach our kids, you know, yoga and meditation. You know, we do it just about every other day in a class. And we see the results. And it's a powerful tool that kids and families then can also take with them when they leave Newport Academy. And one of the great parallels for meditation, there's a lot of reasons, you know, why it works and all that kind of stuff. One of the great things is that life, we're always going to have problems, right? You know, and for parents out there listening, you know, just because you send your kid to treatment does not mean that everything's going to be rosy from here on out, even if it's Newport Academy, you know? So, life is full of challenges. The longer you live, the more you come to accept that fact. And so, but what meditation and yoga does is it teaches you to be calm amidst a storm, you know, and it may be a drizzle or it may be, you know, hurricane. But the more powerful your practice is, the more you're able to mitigate your levels, your peaks and valleys in your emotions. And so the less anxious you may feel over time in certain situations that used to give you great anxiety. And on the flip side, on the downside, you know, the less and less depressed you will come, you will get as life events happen to you.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, I've been reading a lot of the research on trauma and yoga and trauma and meditation, and you know how it's tying into the nervous system and how our brains, you know, if we can do, you know, solid diamorphic breathing, which is a very, again, simple, free thing that you could do in a hotel room, you could do it outside, inside, anywhere you're at, you know, you create this space for yourself that you can control your nervous system and become more parasympathetic dominant. To me, it's amazing, like you're saying, that it's more effective than medication. It's more effective than spending thousands and thousands of dollars going to this expert or this, you know, this specialty or that. And it's something that we all can incorporate. And now we're finally seeing true empirical validated evidence and scientific research that supports something that you and I are secret, I guess, that we've known for a long time.
Right, it's amazing the way that it's been simple. So discounted, and I mean, we can talk about that all day long because it's free.
yeah, it's hard to monetize it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Pharmaceutical companies can't patent it.
Not yet.
Caveat: some people need medication, and medication can do wonders.
Right.
But we're just talking about kind of, I think, in my opinion, the majority of the population.
Well, yeah, and it's fascinating, you know, in the trauma work where they're showing that when you're parasympathetic dominant and in a state, your brain functions totally different than when you're triggered and you're sympathetically dominant and you're agitated. And so when you talk about communicating with parents as a teenager, and you get into the car each day and you're sympathetically dominant and already, you know, activated and your parent is, those conversations aren't going to be, you know, they're not going to go well. And the parents already kind of has a conditioned response, and so does the kid. And it's hard to break those. If you're not in a state, you know, a parasympathetic state, it's hard to break those rhythms. And so it's almost a necessity.
I think it is absolutely a necessity, totally. And like you said, I mean, it's something you can do anywhere. You know, my wife and I wake up every morning and we just sit up straight against the headboard and we meditate right there, you know, every morning. And it's the first 10 minutes plus, sometimes longer, of our day. And if you can start your day that way, I tell you what, I guarantee you, things go a lot better.
Yeah. Well, we're with Jameson Monroe. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got some listeners that have written in some questions and calling in. So thanks for listening with us. Jameson, thanks for being here. And you're listening to Answers the Family. We'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Welcome back to Answers for the Family. We're here with Jameson Monroe. Jameson, are you noticing, you know, different issues over the last 20 years that teens are going through?
I think it's becoming harder and harder to be a teenager, and I think people have said that for many generations. But these days, there's a couple different factors. One is the kind of requirement to always be on, right? And these days technology enables that ability, but you hear about teenagers, and I've heard it firsthand, sleeping with their phones under their pillows. You know, they've got their, you know, they've got their text message alerts set so that it wakes them up in the middle of the night, and then you hear, and there's pressure to be always on, right? So these days, if you don't reply to someone's text, you know, that's a diss. You're in a timely manner, which is pretty much immediately, like, you're ignoring them, you know, and hurting their feelings, and so, you know, then you're the bad guy, right? So it's the pressure to always be on is only getting greater and greater as it's enabled by technology. And then also the pressure to perform. I think that we've done wonders in education for kind of the lower middle classes by opening up the chance for high school and graduating high school and go to college and things like that. But rising tide raises all waters. And so what that's done to, you know, the other part of the demographic is that now, like, if you were already going to college, now the pressure is to go to an Ivy League school, you know, and so the pressure to perform has just only been increased, which increases stress levels, and we know stress is the number one, you know, a psychosomatic, you know, cause of a lot of illnesses, including depression and anxiety. So just the pressure to perform, to always be on and available, is a huge one. And then on the substance abuse side of things, we've seen such an increase in prescription opiates, and that's a phenomenon that started about 10 years ago. With the fact that OxyContin is not addictive, is what the pharmaceutical companies were telling the doctors, that's, you know, they got sued and they had to pay a fine, but it was nominal compared to the profits that they've made as a result of pushing OxyContin out into the general public at astronomical rates compared to those that actually need it. Mm. And that's an interesting story on the fact that it was created for like stage 4 cancer patients for end of life care, and then once they got it approved, they started pitching it to doctors, you know, as an alternative to, you know, Tylenol 4 or something, you know, with wow. a nominal amount of codeine mixed with Tylenol, and then they're prescribing it to, you know, high school football players that sprain their ankle and for getting a wisdom teeth taken out and things wow. like that. So that's a huge trend that we know and we've seen, obviously, and the public has heard a lot about it, from overdoses, not only of teenagers and young adults, but a lot of celebrities have died from prescription drug overdoses. You know, we had Prince this year, and we've had Heath Ledger and, you know, just many, many others. And
I think you have Philip Seymour, too, right?
Yeah, well, he was a combination, right? I think he also had heroin, too, and mm-hmm. that's why you read my mind, is that the thing about, you know, OxyContin and a lot of these prescription opiates is that they are heroin in pill form. You know, they're just a very fancy, you know, form of heroin that's patented by a pharma company. And so when you pay, you know, $40, $50, $60, sometimes $80 for a pill, that's not, and you get hooked, that's not a very, you know, economically sustainable habit. And so actually, I've read some stories about how, you know, the Mexican cartels, they aren't stupid. They actually flooded the U.S. market with very cheap heroin. They cut the price of heroin by like 20% across the board, because they knew they had so many more opiate addicts in America. And so it caused those that had, a highly, you know, a super high cost habit of these prescription pills, an easy out in order to transfer to something, you know, the same dose now costs $5, right?
Yeah.
But it's just heroin. So once you get past that taboo of doing heroin, which the only way to do heroin is not to inject it. Like, we see teenagers smoking it a lot of times. And even sometimes snorting it, but mainly they start smoking it, which is, you know, you don't use a needle, you smoke pot already, so what's the big deal kind of thing,
right?
You know? And it's just a sad state of affairs. And then now we've got the overdoses from the prescription pills and from the heroin, and then you see what's really scary right now going on. I know you've seen this, is kind of the fake painkillers. Mm-hmm. You know, we got fentanyl and much stronger drugs that are being passed off as either painkillers or anti-anxiety medication like Xanax and whatnot. And then that's killing a lot of kids too. It's really scary.
The fentanyl seems to be the one that just you hear the most overdoses so quickly with.
With the teenagers. Yeah. Absolutely. And
I know in Sacramento they had a big problem, and you know it's just it's scary to me as a parent that you know there was this. I think to myself, and maybe because you and I are really in this world that that we know the realities of situations. But I get a lot of parents that'll call in or come into my practice and say, you know, well, it's just you know my kid I think is just doing experimental use, and I feel like when I asked you the question about 20 years ago, what's different? I feel like what's different now is you know a lot of these quote experimental uses isn't going to lead to a hangover or a headache. It's going to lead to a death possibly. So it's a different. We're in a different world, like you were saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and 20 years ago was totally different. You know, no one's ever died of a marijuana overdose and never will,
right.
You know.
But you don't know what the marijuana is. I mean, it's a different, you know, there's the spices.
These days it's laced, spiked with so much stuff. And then there's the synthetic marijuana. So, you know, you're not just getting some grass. You're getting stuff that was created in a lab. You know, it's a chemical compound that doesn't grow. It's not natural, man. You know what I mean? Like the old excuse. I tell my parents that. But it's
natural, man.
You know, the kids these days, it's not natural.
Right.
And that argument doesn't work anymore. Not that they don't try and use it. And these days, I think prescription pills is the scariest thing out there, and that's not just experimenting because you don't know what you're going to get. And the fentanyl thing is we even had a kid. Is what happened now and has been happening and will continue to happen is that, you know, drug dealers, you know, whatever that may be, which, by the way, that may be, you know, the honor roll student at your kid's high school, by the way, you know.
It's not the stereotypical,
Yeah.
It's not Spicoli,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had a case where the athletic director's son was the guy supplying the pills to half the school. And then on the fentanyl thing, we had a kid who was taking Xanax and admitted to us, and then he tested positive for fentanyl. And it was actually right before that news story hit, like literally like 2 days after the news story hit, and our medical director sent us an email saying, well, now we've got our answer, because he was taking, what looks like a Xanax, but it was either laced or completely different. It was fentanyl, which is 30 times more powerful than Xanax?
Yeah, and your body's not used to it. That's night-night, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the scary part, big scary.
Let's get to one of these these email questions, if you don't mind. Abby wrote us in here, and she said, each year an increasing number of teens in our summer camp program are showing signs of cutting themselves, which is hard to hide on their bare arms and legs. They seem so normal in their daily interactions and almost wear them like a badge of honor. What do you think is at the heart of this? Is this is some of this for attention, or are they truly in major distress? From a camp counselor named Abby.
Cool. Thank you, Abby, so much for bringing this to the forefront and asking the question. That is a trend that we've seen certainly uptick in the past 20 years. I've got some theories as to why. Let me talk about the reason why people do it. It actually can act like an opiate on the brain chemistry. From an objective kind of standpoint, non-scientific standpoint, is that it's used as a coping mechanism because it creates a physical pain that relieves an emotional pain. And so whether you call it, a distraction or a substitute, it's used to relieve an emotional pain or trauma, really, in so many different definitions of trauma. And so physiologically, biologically speaking, it stimulates the same receptors in the brain as an opiate may, and so it works. And so, you know, it's used as self-medicating as a coping mechanism. Now, I think we've seen the proliferation of it due to social media. to be honest with you, because there's, you know, if you go on Tumblr or Instagram or anything, there's a lot of hashtags and kind of, you know, pro-cutting websites, despite the efforts of these social networks to mitigate these, you know, and even not the pro, you know, pro-cutting websites or whatnot, there's just still a little bit more of an acceptance of it as a coping mechanism. And I think as teenagers, we're curious. We want to try something new and different, and, you know, whereas a kid in the middle of Nebraska, you know, may have never heard of cutting, you know, because no one in his peer group or at his high school was doing it, right? But nowadays, you know, you've got access to every high school in the country with these social networks. So you're not just susceptible to what's going on within your community. You're susceptible to what's going on in the whole world, you know. Quite frankly. And so it just gives, it's an easier way for kids to get ideas on how to escape their own reality, which being a teenager is painful, period, even if you've got underlying issues or not.
And it seems like, similar to drugs and alcohol, in the short term, it works. You know, it's
exactly.
Doing it's filling some cause, and it has an actual efficiency to it.
Exactly, Matt. And back to that original quote of our liquor was but a symptom. We had to get down to the causes and conditions. You know, in Newport, we believe you can take out that word liquor and you can put in cutting, you know. You can put in food. You can put in sex. You can even put in Instagram, you know. There's an argument to be made, and there's actually science that shows through brain scans that, you know, scrolling through your Instagram account or getting so many likes actually triggers the same response as cocaine. Now, it's not as rapid and not as grand as doing cocaine, but it's still a very similar response, the same receptors, the pleasure centers of the brain. And if you are susceptible in any way and you don't have any natural pleasure in your life, that can become addictive. And, you know, that's where this whole concept of process addictions and internet addiction and gaming addiction is that, you know, in normal balanced doses, these things aren't bad. Drinking's not, you know, awful if you do it every now and then, you know. Sex in reasonable amounts and,
Don't cut me off, buddy.
Instagram and all this kind of stuff it's not inherently bad. I mean, drugs aren't inherently bad either. They've got a lot of, you know, beneficial uses. But once that becomes your default coping mechanism and used in excess, and you start, you know, ignoring other normal, you know, life duties, that's when it becomes a problem, right? So all of these kind of pleasures in excess are when it becomes a problem, and when, you know, we need to start looking at it.
As you were talking about the culture of always being on and having the phone under your bed, I cringe at what it must be like to be a teenager today, because, you know, when we were, and we're the same generation, when we were growing up, there was, you know, you have the same fear of rejection, and you would do the traditional things of setting yourself up to get rejected or avoid situations you're worried about rejection, or do, you know, along those lines. But today, you're out there 100% of the time, it feels like. And so where I would fall and stub my toes, no one could see, you know, 40-50% of the time, where now it's almost like anything you do, people are watching, people are recording, people know about it, and then they're spreading it. I mean, what a tough time to be a teenager.
I totally agree, Matt. I mean, I wouldn't go back, would you?
No. I mean, I feel for them, and I wonder, as parents or as a society, what's our role? I mean, how can we, you know, alleviate some of this stress?
You know, I'm about to be a father at the beginning of next year.
Congratulations.
And, you know, so thank you. And having worked with teenagers for so long, I've obviously given it a lot of thought. Now, you know, thought is different than action. I know that much. You know, I didn't have a cell phone until I was probably 18 or 19, you know.
Yeah.
Probably 19, really, my own. I'd borrow my mom's if I went out or something. But, yeah, a different time, right, different time period these days. And so I mean, I think we don't have technology advanced so rapidly. We've not, we as kind of treatment professionals, you know, and even more behind us are educators in this regard, right? And so we don't teach safe technology use, you know, in the classroom, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, our substance abuse prevention programs are still antiquated and frankly awful within the school system, and proven the most common one is proven to be not effective by its own government body. But anyway,
it's horrible. So bad.
So, we're so far behind there. We definitely haven't caught up to the needs of teaching technology, and actually that's part of what you know, one of our efforts at Newport Academy is taking all that we see in the treatment center, and then we've got a team of professionals, licensed clinicians that go out, and some alumni that go out into schools and teach parents and schools how to navigate today's world in 2016. And so that's just one of our passions, is that we see so much, you know, of the results of what happens with kind of unmitigated you know, use of these self-medicative, you know, tools. And so let's take what we learn by treating the negative effects and go out to, you know, middle schools, junior highs and high schools and teach parents and kids how to avoid the pitfalls. And so part of our effort we're launching next year is a technology, you know, class on how best practices and how to lead a balanced kind of life with technology being ever present.
And I like, you know, Newport kind of system of not black and white, you know, more dialectical, that, you know, two opposites can be true at the same time. And it's not a, like you're saying, it's not an all or nothing thing. It's, this is what our society has. It's part of it. And how do we integrate it in a healthy way? You know, versus the all or nothing black and white kind of response that a lot of people and programs have adopted.
Exactly. Thank you for acknowledging that.
We have one more email coming in about Newport Academy, and the writer states, as a relatively new educational consultant specializing in emotionally challenged teens, I have found that programs which combine their therapeutic protocols with outdoor and creative art activities have had more successful outcomes. I've read through your site, and it was the absolutely gorgeous scenes of kids in nature that captured my attention. I'm always seeking new programs to recommend. So can you comment on how nature and the arts play a role at Newport Academy?
Absolutely. Thank you to whoever that was. I appreciate it. And yeah, we've got some videos where our staff talk exactly about what they do and the effect that it has on the kids as well. So with teenagers, with the kind of the most common modality used and across the board in therapy, I think, is cognitive behavioral therapy, right? And that therapy most of the time requires a prefrontal cortex or a rational thinking part of the brain. And what we know about brain development is that as human beings, and I think it's getting later and later, is that as teenagers and young adults, we don't have a developed prefrontal cortex that is able to kind of make a rational thought that if I do A, then B kind of thing, you know. We're run by emotion and kind of by experience and things like that. And so that's where if you're treating adolescents and young adults, like this educational consultant says, you've got to involve an experiential component. And so I love the way we do it at Newport Academy, because we do all of the experiential stuff and skills-based outdoor stuff, you know, within the context of a residential setting, so that you know, you're not sent to a very remote, you know, place, and then you learn these kind of primitive skills and whatnot, and then, you know, it's you do this out there, and then you come back into life, and you're expected to implement everything. With us, it's very much in the moment, and so, like, you know, in the afternoon, we're either on our beautiful campus or we're off campus for a little bit, and we come back, and it's almost immediately integrated into the day-to-day life of someone. And so how we do that is broad. You know, I mentioned yoga and meditation that we're doing every other day. And then, you know, the gardening, and actually there's evidence to show that just digging in the soil with your bare hands, you know, increases mood, decreases depression, things like that. And then We do art. We've got full-time art therapists on staff, so we're doing art therapy, which is another way to access kids that, you know, aren't going to sit across from you in an office and talk. We can. There's many exercises in order to get to the same end goal, which is, you know, one, for a kid to reveal themselves to you and then to be able to work through their issues, right? And so we can do that with art. We can do that through music. So we do a lot of drumming and music therapy. And then we do rock climbing, paddle boarding.
Wow.
All with the idea, with a therapeutic bent, if you will, in that there's, you know, there's at the very least a metaphor, which doesn't, you know, describe it near enough, you know, there's the ability to draw the same skills and parallels into our real life. And then, you know, later that night at dinner, you know, you've got a disagreement with a peer of yours in treatment, and, you know, the staff that's there with you that was, you know, talking about balance in our life, and when we're paddleboarding on the river and the wave comes, and how we balance through that, and how we, you know, centered ourselves and we took deep breaths and we concentrated on something, we can practice those same skills when we're interacting with someone or someone, you know, or a wave, quote unquote, a wave comes our way and we've got to ride the wave. You know, when we feel our anxiety increase, you know, we've got to, you know, balance ourselves and breathe and write it out, you know, but utilizing the skills, back to breath work is such a huge thing, and huge advantage in being able to do that.
It's, you know, as we're kind of running out of time here, I wanted to really thank you, Jameson. I mean, you've dedicated your life for teenagers, and, you know, your passion is evident. You've put all of yourself into this vehicle, which is Newport Academy, and you've just been a great contribution to our field and to, you know, teenagers in general. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Matt, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. I feel very, very blessed, and I'm very grateful that I get to wake up every day, you know, and help other human beings. It's truly, truly a you know, a gift from God, and I'm very grateful, even more grateful for all the wonderful people that I get to work with at Newport Academy. You know, I really feel like we've got one of the greatest, both clinical and operational teams out there. Support staff across the board, and then the wonderful professionals like yourself that provide so many complimentary services to us, whether that's treating a different population or in a different setting. It's truly an honor. And then what we need more of, Matt, are therapeutic high schools, recovery high schools.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that, but we've got
till next time, right?
Yeah, next time. And that's what we talked about a long time ago, but now we've got three of them. And hope to open one a year.
What an incredible opportunity for a kid in high school to be able to be in a learning environment where there's no stigma. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, but...
Yeah. Dude, we've got three kids at Berkeley next year.
Wow. Unbelievable.
They graduated from Newport Academy. That's awesome, so crazy and awesome at the same time.
For those of you listening that are interested in Newport Academy, very simple, www.newportacademy.com. That's NEWPORTACADEMY.com. They also have a toll-free number, 888-934-122. Jameson, thank you again. Let's make it a fourth time on this show soon.
Oh, that'd be awesome, man. It'd be a pleasure.
Excellent. Well, you have a great day.
All right, bud. You too. Take care.
Okay, bye. And please, our guests, be sure to put on your calendar and tune in next Monday, August 22nd, when our guest, Dr. Alexander Young from the Mountain Valley Treatment Center, will join us to discuss adolescent anxiety. If you missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time you're on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For Dr. Matt Polacek, we'll miss Alan, but we'll get him back next week. For all those listeners, thank you for listening and supporting us and listening to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.